Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Thank you, Briefly, founder Brian Brown. You know those foghorns that lead off the show on these cold sort of fall winter days. We hear them in the morning, usually, when it's quiet, when there's fog lying in Puget Sound. Hey, as we continue, Brian, in your indomitable spirit, we have now arrived at Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020, in the fourth year of the tweet. And here's a tweet. And also the global celebration of new leadership in America.
Woo-hoo!
Yay! Let's hear it. Look at that crowd.
Woo, 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 woo!
As we sit here biting our nails and searching the internet for the latest stress reduction guidance, let me remind you, our dear listener, that we must only endure another 29 days until the inauguration of President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris. Hey, let's hear the crowd cheer. Yay! Okay. Let us also remind you, dear listener, that we have now put the 2020 winter solstice behind us. So this is the winter solstice 2020 edition of the Brown Briefly. The days ahead are now growing longer, and the ever necessary light will become stronger. So as we again emerge from darkness, will we also shed political darkness? Just a reminder to the Brieflies assembled here today that at the end of the show, each of us will have the opportunity to share what we believe will be a key indication that we are shedding political darkness.
I think so. Oh. And
Kevin's frozen on us.
Jayapal or Omar or Ocasio-Cortez at the end, maybe that could be a sign. But stay tuned, dear listener, and all will be revealed at the end of the show. So let's get on to introductions. Myself, editor of Indivisible Vachon's weekly publication for your consideration, Kevin Jones. I do just to shout out that tonight, December 22nd at 7 p.m., our own Congresswoman Jayapal, co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, will be on an online town hall. So listen and tune in to see how she can help the Biden-Harris administration address some of those issues like COVID relief, inequality, and systemic bias. If you go to the Indivisible Vachon website or the Facebook page, you'll find a link to the event. So I hope you'll take note of that and register. And then I'll see you tonight at 7. Okay, meanwhile, let's get on with the show. So let's recognize Lynn Kerrigan, poet par excellence, relocated from the land of magnolias to the island of Madrones, our analytic, academic, social worker, backup singer, musician, activist, and former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes. Lynn, I hope you're happy and healthy as we immerse ourselves in the holiday season.
Hey, good morning, Kevin. I guess I want to say that solstice is one of my favorite celebrations of the year, being and identifying as Celtic with a big Scottish and Irish background. I really am desperate for the light to come back, and I celebrated it last night by going out and howling at the moon as long as I thought my neighbors might be able to tolerate it. So anybody that lives in Ellisport, that was me, and I hope you join me next year. It feels good to howl at the moon. Come on. We're overly civilized these days. And I think it's important to realize that our circadian rhythms are really suffering in the darkness and the rain. And we have to make it better with a lot of fireside activities and celebration of the stars and, frankly, a lot of drinking in my culture. So I'm on it.
All right. Well, hey, if you howl again tonight, you can howl at the visible Saturn and Jupiter, most likely. So
that's right. The alignments are coming up. They're going to look almost like one planet. You know, this is the time when something pauses briefly. It's true. Time is not constant. It pauses at this time of year to get us around that elliptical bend that the solstice has gotten us in. So enjoy a day or two of suspended animation, and then we will launch into a new year.
Absolutely. Okay, let's move on to an always welcome sight on our Zoom screens, and music to our ears is singer, thespian, philosopher, and today only a quarter bubble shy of plum, carpenter Michael Shook, a.k.a. Chauncey Gardner. And Michael, has the culmination of vegetative glory displayed by the scintillating fall colors of your Japanese maple forest left you with warm memories to tide you through this winter?
It has indeed. Thank you, Kevin. Yeah, it's marvelous. This is one of my favorite times of the year. I love the fact that most life sort of slows way down, as you mentioned, Lynn, and in our the hubbub and the hurly-burly of our modern culture, we forget that, and it's hard to do if you're still working. That thank goodness I'm retired and I can sort of slow my pace down to match the pace of the days and everything. But going out in the garden is so marvelous. I can, the moss is scintillating, and the buds on everything. This is the thing that gets me about this time of year. Here it is in the shortest days of the year, in the midst of the cold and the damp, and yet all the twigs and the buds on the trees are just bright red, most of them glowing kind of, and waiting to, you know, you can just see them. They're just poised, waiting for March and April. It's very exciting.
I think, do they call them the catkins with the pollen?
And the catkins will be coming out in probably another month, maybe month and a half. It kind of, it varies, of course, year to year on the hazelnuts. Yeah, it's just wonderful.
Yes, our hazelnut trees are in full catkin at the moment. So. Hey, let's see here. Also, again with us, I would say maybe a standard issue briefly, is island hopping mystic muse, author, and wandering poet Gail Kellner. How are you today, Gail?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you for asking. My family, we gave up celebrating the traditional Christmas and Christmas Eve a few years back in favor of solstice. So we had our big celebration last night, and that included a wonderful dinner that my daughter-in-law cooked, and you know, festive table, and then to top it off, we had a little snow falling right as we were gathering. So that was very sweet.
It was very nice last night. I enjoyed it as well. Let's see. Of course, none of us would be here without the mood modulating synthesizer of voices from the virtual land of Zoom, complete with sound effects. Who needs autopilot, airline captain, champion Zoomologist, and steady-handed sound engineer Truman O'Brien? So Truman, how are your Army buddies dealing with this inexorable walk towards Inauguration Day?
Well, they're actually doing pretty well. They're, you know, I've been telling them, look, guys, you know, we kept an eye on Trump, so now we have to start keeping an eye on Biden. You know, I mean, it's our job to pay attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C., and they fully agreed. Boy, did they ever, as you can imagine, you know, so there you go.
But I love that. I love that, Truman, because that is our job. People quote Jefferson all the time that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And they take it, you know, that we've somehow, some people take that to mean we've got to be in the streets armed and ready to fend off whomever. And I've always taken it to be, no, there are representatives, but we have to watch them. Because power does corrupt.
Absolutely.
So let's keep an eye on them, and let's make sure that they're doing their jobs appropriately.
And if they're not, you write to them and say, hey, you know, this is what we want you to do. That's not what we want you to do. You know,
yeah.
That's what it's all about.
Yes, ever-present vigilance in a functioning democracy.
That's right.
Thomas Jefferson's, you know, the cost of freedom is eternal vigilance. So, got to watch them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the voice beaming into us, island historian, storyteller, international educator, and accomplished skipper, Bruce Holman, our stalwart guardian of the galaxy, with another stellarly beautiful Zoom background.
Yeah, my Zoom background today is the sunset on Mount Rainier. It's the solstice is always an interesting time because we all celebrate the fact that the days are going to get longer and more light. But it's an interesting thing. This year in particular, yesterday, the day of the solstice, was probably as miserable a Northwest day as you could
That's
have.
That's for sure.
Bucketed down rain. It was dark. It was cloudy. And then this morning, glorious sunrise and clear skies. I mean, it's just it's like this magical transformation.
But a metaphor, but
what's interesting about it is by the end of this week, we will have two more minutes of daylight at the end of this week. So we cherish every moment of it. But what's fascinating about it is that the days are actually getting longer, but they're getting shorter in the afternoon because the sun continues to set earlier for about three more weeks, but it rises earlier for the next 3 weeks. So the days are getting longer, but the afternoons are getting shorter. So it's this kind of a little trick that nature plays on us.
Truman. I have to tell you two things, flying up to Alaska, several times I've taken off just as the sun set. And so the sun had just gone down, so it was just getting dark and we took off. And we climbed up, of course, and back up into the sunlight at altitude. And then the sun eventually set. And then by the time we got to Anchorage, it was coming back up again. I mean that you could see it, and then it was set again. So you get to see it set three times. It's pretty fascinating to do that. And the other part of that is being based in Anchorage for 4 years, the days in Alaska, of course, get longer, much quicker than they do down here. They are going, I don't know, several minutes a day. And so it really changes in a hurry up there. It's really fun to see.
Truman, do they have daylight savings time in Alaska?
Yes, yes.
Because I know there's a couple of states that don't.
Yeah, Arizona's one that does not, but Alaska does. Yep.
And maybe what, Hawaii?
Maybe Hawaii. I think for sure Arizona and maybe Hawaii. Yep.
So I just think that contributes. If we were getting up earlier, we would be benefiting more.
That's right.
Exactly.
So I'm ready for daylight savings time all year long.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, Bruce's comments do reward the early riser. So
maybe
more of us will convert. There is a burning question in my mind since Friday, actually, just in the last few days. We all know, for example, that members of the Army are soldiers. The Navy are sailors, the Air Force are airmen, Coast Guard are Coast Guardsmen, and the Marines are creatively the Marines. But in case you've not yet heard, henceforth, members of the Space Force will now be called
Guardians.
Guardians. So now the question, given the intergalactic influence of our dear historian Bruce, did you lend your Guardian of the Galaxy moniker to the Space Force? And are you maybe getting any royalties?
Well, I've requested royalties, but actually it goes back to 1983 when the Air Force Space Command was formed. And their motto was actually Guardians of the High Frontier. Mm-hmm. So that's where they drew it from. So I'd like to think they drew it from us Guardians of the Galaxy, but no, it's a little more pedestrian than that. They went back to the Air Force Space Command of 1983.
You should be commander. And I would ask, Guardians from what? Not of what, but from
aliens.
What?
Aliens.
All the aliens out there. You've never seen, you never read War of the Worlds?
That's right.
Oh, I read it.
Good question to ponder. Gail, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm just, in noting the I like the Guardian, Space Force Guardians, because it's a gender neutral term, you know, and airmen and, you know, what are the others?
Sailors can be either. Soldiers could be that, either.
Soldiers are kind of, is a kind of gender neutral term.
And so yeah. are sailors.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so several of them are not. And so it's nice that in this day and age, we may come up with a gender neutral term for that. So I like Guardian.
I actually think it should be the space farce, though, myself.
well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, the space farce.
One of the interesting things about it is they have a motto. Most of us are familiar with the Marines' motto is Semper Fidelis, which means always faithful. The new Space Command motto is Semper, Semper Supra.
Semper Supra.
Which means...
always over.
It means always above.
Yeah.
Always above, always over. So the Marines say Semper Fi, so I wonder if the new Space Force is going to say Semper Sue.
Doesn't have quite boy named Sue. That's it. There's songs to be written about that.
Yes, Michael, how can you help us understand this dilemma?
I don't know if I can help with understanding it at all, because I don't understand it myself. I don't think I'm really dismayed at this whole thing. I would even more so, I think, than when W. Bush came up with the idiotic plan to form the Department of Homeland Security. We have 17 at last count different intelligence community branches in this country now, which seems to me like about 12 too many, at least. I mean, and now we've got this whole new branch. And of course, there's money to be made off of it, and districts that are going to be fighting for federal dollars for bases and things. So it's never going to go away. And even the motto of it, always above. This is just hubris again, and this is not a good thing. A democratic republic does not show its strength, I don't think, by forming endlessly these militaristic forces. We need a strong, extremely professional military force, because the world's a very dangerous place. But for goodness sakes, we need to be humble about it. We need to have that framed within our republic's context. And I think this whole thing is a terrible idea.
You know, Michael, as you're talking, it reminds me of the Strategic Defense Initiative under Reagan. Do you remember that? Because it was called Star Wars in his reign, because they were up there developing warfare systems that could shoot lasers and all of that across our skies, you know, above our planet. And personally, I don't believe that was to deter aliens. I think it was a very serious effort to gain some kind of strategic advantage in the high above. And I know that those kinds of plans are still being looked at, whether or not they're being promoted. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the Space Force.
I have two comments. The first is that I really would like to see us do with space what we've done with Antarctica. And Antarctica, there's an international agreement that, you know, there won't be any development, no military, no nothing down there. And you can't, nobody owns it. It's shared space. No nukes. You can't have any, a nuclear ship can't be in Antarctica.
Oh,
and so, I think that's really a great thing. And I would love to see us continue that into space.
Truman, was that a compact, kind of a unilateral UN compact?
International agreement, yes.
Yeah. The Antarctic Treaty, we do actually have one. There's a Treaty of the Moon, and it also holds that the moon cannot be used as a military base or to be used. I know in Antarctica this is true, and I believe it's also true in the moon that you can't use it as a dumping ground.
Right.
And that it is a shared, a shared thing.
A shared asset.
Mm-hmm. Asset.
My second comment to Michael to address your 17 different intelligence agencies. I was in military intelligence when I was in the Army, and I was in a very narrow branch, very narrow field. And talking to the folks that were in that field today, that has expanded so that many of these groups, like I'm trying to think of what you call it, but anyway, it's radio, visual, all of these things are now combined into a much more cohesive group, so that the intelligence is developed all around. So you're getting not just one little piece of something, you're getting a much broader picture. So even though there may be a number of agencies, they are really combining their efforts to provide a cohesive intelligence group.
That's heartening. That's heartening to hear, because goodness knows with that kind of coordination is obviously essential. So that's great.
Well, and one thing a lot of countries have done is they've moved away from individual branches of services, and they've formed what they call the defense forces. And so everything's under a unified command, and it eliminates that parochialism of the Marines and the Coast Guard and the Navy and the Army and the Air Force and the Space Command or whatever, and they're all under one sort of branch of defense forces. Also, the concept of calling your military a defense force rather than the Army or the Navy or the Air Force has a psychological impact, because it's really about defending us rather than imposing ourselves on other people. I mean, that will still continue to some extent, but the terminology becomes important, because words do matter.
Go ahead, Bruce. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'd like to see them called, something like some kind of a peace force. Again, I think we have a certain fabricated, manufactured sense of fear that kind of grips the world and allows for that kind of military expansion that we might not actually need. Some of that has its place, and I can see Truman right here. He's going red, and his finger
is
wagging.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
I've broken the first rule of Truman.
Yes, you have. Don't contradict Truman.
Not disagree with Truman, but however I do, and I think that it's in the words that words matter, and so the framing of how we talk about things, like the UN has peacekeepers, and I think that's a wise way to maneuver in the world. Truman, go ahead.
No, I agree with you, Gail. I think that in a defense force, I like also, because you're not just defending us, you're defending other people that need defense against aggressors. So I think that's a great idea. When you said the world is not that dangerous, boy, are you wrong there. It is very dangerous, very dangerous. I cannot tell you the things that are going on out there that, oh man, we just have no idea.
More dangerous
about.
Than they'll ever tell us.
More I dangerous
learned that
than you'll ever learn.
When I worked for the Army
That's
for
right.
about
That's
half
right.
a year.
That's right.
And my husband came back from Vietnam. Yeah. They'll never tell us what's
That's
going
right.
on.
Well, I think that one of the things that to be remembered in all of this is that we are the United States, and I'm not saying this in an unpatriotic way, but wielding the power that we do, we are actually, in many ways, more countries and more people are afraid of than probably anyone else. And so who exactly is dangerous is a good question to ask, I think. And I also think it's very important that as we move forward in the world, that we recognize that 99%+ of the people just want to raise their families, have a decent job, a home to come to, food to eat. And this is when those basic things are met and provided for, the need for military protection and all of these things reduces quite a bit. I mean, in some ways, we create the problem ourselves with these massive militaries and around the world, but not just say in the United States.
Michael, you had some thoughts.
Well, I was going to bring up another thing, but it, just to address quickly, Gail, what you said there, Hans Rosling, who's deceased now, but has started a website, and I forget the name of it. This is terrible, but where he talks about different things and what is actually happening in the world. And so the world is, I agree with you, Truman, still an extraordinarily dangerous place. It's probably good. I don't know that I want to know all the threats that there are. But at the same time, there are fewer active armed conflicts happening now in the world than there have been, I think, in our recorded history. I think it's down to single digits, or maybe just as many as 8 or 9. So that's, as imperfect as all of this is, and as clumsily as we're managing it, we're still, you know, kind of inching forward. And I have to say, I think part of it is having a strong, professional, well-trained, well-equipped defense force kind of in the background there saying, you know, play ball and you're going to be okay. But
speak softly and carry a big stick, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Teddy Roosevelt. Now,
the other thing I was going to mention real quick is, and this is something maybe for another discussion down the road, but I've been thinking lately, wouldn't it be fabulous a way to pull the country together more if we instituted 2 years mandatory public service upon graduation from high school? And you get people,
many countries
and there's
do that.
No exemption.
Yep.
No
and
exemption.
You reward it with college, opportunity to follow that with college.
Some of that stuff towards that, sure. But you would be able to put people out there, and they would work with folks who, you know, maybe some guy from Chicago or something is working with a guy from Arizona or a gal from Florida or something, and we'd start to see each other more as Americans.
I agree, 100%.
Yeah, great way to pull people together.
I agree, Michael.
Let's see, speaking of appropriate uses of the military, we have, I think, a couple of sound bites queued up, right, Truman?
I do.
So why don't we go ahead and listen first to what the Law and Order Party is talking about in the Oval Office with no longer National Security Advisor General Flynn.
It's loading up here. Just kidding. Oh shoot! Hang on a minute. Hang on. A darn thing.
I like that.
Well, it threw a net.
Flynn be stripped of his title as general, given his.
Being.
Well, I don't know. You know, he's a former self-admitted two-time felon and now pardoned national security advisor.
Yeah.
This is what he's come up with recently.
All right, so what happened, of course, is that it threw one of these darned ads in here, and I'm trying to get rid of it, but okay. Here we go. Let's see if this is it. Okay, here we go.
Within the swing states, if he wanted to, he could take military capabilities and he could place them in those states and basically rerun an election in each of those states. I mean, it's not unprecedented. I mean, these people out there talking about martial law, it's like it's something that we've never done. We've done, the martial law has been instituted 64 times, Greg. So I'm not calling for that. We have a constitutional process. We clearly have a constitutional process. I think you highlighted some of that in your previous segment. That has to be followed.
So a retired General Flynn says it's not unprecedented to institute martial law to rerun an election. What do we all think about that?
You have to look at the basis on which that would be done. It's called the Insurrection Act that was passed in 1807. And it's interesting. If you take a few minutes, let me parse this out for you. The title is an act authorizing the employment of the land and naval forces of the United States in cases of insurrection. So the use of the military, the Army and Navy, basically, which is all we had at that point. And the act reads, and again, let me parse this a little bit for you, that in all cases, insurrection or obstruction of the laws, so not only insurrection, but obstruction of the laws, either of the United States, so federal laws, or of any individual state or territory. So you can apply it nationally, you can apply it to an individual state, where it is lawful. So this is the important part of the act, where it's lawful for the President of the United States to call forth the militia for purposes of suppressing such insurrections or of causing the laws to be duly executed. It shall be lawful for him to employ for the same purposes such part of the land or naval forces of the United States. So in other words, he can call out the National Guard, the militia, or he can call out the Army and the Navy, the federal forces, shall be judged of the United States as shall be judged necessary, having first observed all the prerequisites of the law in that respect. So it gives the president unilateral power to employ the military or to federalize the National Guard. And all the cases that Flynn referred to, the 60 cases, have mostly been either to enforce labor laws, you know, the labor strikes of the early 20th century in the West, in particular, in Colorado and in Wyoming and in New Mexico, and in the 1960s to enforce desegregation. So calling out federal troops into Little Rock, Arkansas, the University of Mississippi, you know, when the governor of Alabama stood in the schoolhouse door. There have been cases of martial law being applied in the past, but it's never been done nationally. It's always been done in one state or one area, territory, because some of the states weren't states yet. But it's never been done nationally, and it's always been for the purpose of enforcing federal law. So there is the precedent there to do it, and the president has the authority to do it.
Lynn,
Bruce, I have a question for Bruce and a comment. My question, and then let me make my comment. My question has to do with regard to the Insurrection Act being instituted. What is the role of governors and or mayors, you know, at the local level? Because, you know, I know when the Portland and Seattle protests were heating up and there was starting to be rioting and some looting, Trump immediately sent somebody down, you know, to both cities sort of to start managing. And I just remember Jay Inslee's, our governor, standing up and saying, no, you know, this is not on my authorization. We are not wanting you here at this point. You know, we are capable of managing. So my question again is, Bruce, what is the role of the local people?
Well, it varies. Okay. I mean, a lot in a number of cases, particularly in labor disputes in the late 19th, early 20th century, they were at the request of governors. With the civil rights, they were in opposition. The governors didn't want. And so the federal government, the president, overstepped the governor and nationalized or federalized the National Guard to use them to enforce federal law. So you do not, the president does not have to have compliance by governors or by any local authorities. This is the ability of the president to overstep local authorities and to impose martial law. In the past, it's always been done in a specific area, but there's nothing in the act that prevents it from being national.
Interesting. I was just raising that question with myself watching the PBS series on Grant, President Ulysses Grant, because that was another indication of a time when martial law was in Alabama, sure, asked for by the governor because he was unable to protect the Black Americans who had just been freed.
Right.
And as you know, right after the Civil War, Johnson refused to manage the Reconstruction plans that had been put into place by President Lincoln. And so it was left till Grant coming in to try to solve some of that. And he did declare martial law and go send troops down into Alabama.
Well, what martial law does, what's interesting about martial law is it suspends civil law. It suspends the right of habeas corpus, and it suspends the courts. And so everything becomes a military tribunal, a court-martial, basically. Any offense becomes a court-martial offense, judged by military courts. So it's a fairly serious step to take. And in fact, during the Civil War, all of the Southern states were declared in insurrection and were subject to the Insurrection Act. And then various cases. And if you can, if you go online, if you look at Wikipedia or look at any of the websites, the history websites about the Insurrection Act, you can see the list of all the places they've been applied. And some have been for civil unrest, like the riots in L.A., the 68 riots in Detroit and other cities. Martial law was declared and federal troops were sent in to restore order. So it's been used numerous times, but it's never been used to overturn an election or to rerun an election.
So well, and that was what was so startling to me is that Flynn talks about the use of the Insurrection Act and then rerunning the election. And it's not unprecedented. His is his very next line, which I think is very shocking. You know, one of the things I don't think we have time to play the other tape from former also National Security Advisor John Bolton, who basically called this appalling and went on to say that this is the sort of insight into the crazy actions that occur in the Oval Office basically every day. And I think the good news that I want to make sure we leave this discussion with is that the outcry from national leaders like Bolton are really important in suppressing the idea that these actions can move forward. And I heard on the news just over the last few days, people using the word coup. And indeed, these are some of the elements that we would see in other countries that have coups. So I think, you know, on Voice of Vashon, we have a platform to denounce this type of activity and suggest that this isn't the way America should be. So I'm glad that we have that opportunity today. Any other thoughts on what we've been hearing from the Oval Office, and Flynn and Bolton and others?
Well, from my perspective, it's a very dangerous time.
Yes.
I mean, there's been, just in the last 2 days, there's been two articles about Trump's loss of mental stability and how he's sort of spiraling out of control right now. And it's a very dangerous time. And the fact that he's surrounded himself by people like Flynn, by this Sydney, whatever her name is, attorney who thinks that the dead Argentina dictator is in charge of our elections. I mean, it's some very strange people that Trump has surrounded himself with. And so it's a very dangerous time in the next, 29, 30 days, whatever we have until the inauguration, it could get very sticky. My sense, I've talked quite a bit with my brother-in-law, who's a retired colonel in the Army, and he's very convinced that the military has made it clear that they will not interfere in a political situation, and that they, even if Trump declares martial law, that they will probably not recognize it. But if he does, it will be in the hands of the military to hold up our democracy.
The one thing that is a bit heartening to me is that these companies, the Dominion or whatever the name of the company is, they are suing some of these news outlets, the super right-wing news outlets, and saying, hey, you know, put up or shut up. And and they are starting to backpedal like it's going out of style. And I think that is one of the things, because you have to convince all those nutcases that are following Trump that, you know, you can't do that. You can't follow him, that this is crazy talk. Right. And these guys are putting the pressure on those guys to shut up. So I think that's a really hard thing to me anyway.
Absolutely. Hey, I would like to move on to what we promised at the beginning of the show. Maybe we can fit in more commentary on this as we go. But what are we looking for? What's that big indicator as we emerge from the darkness of the solstice this year? How do we push back on the political darkness? What are we looking for? I'll lead off and say maybe it'll be an infrastructure week where we actually talk about infrastructure legislation and progress. So maybe that's one. What else are we looking for? Gail?
Well, you know, one of the things that I was really heartened by, that there was $35 billion set aside for green energy in the current stimulus bill. And it's one of the biggest bills and that's come along, I think, since 2009. And it also curtails the use of chemicals in refrigerants and cool air cooling that are especially toxic with regard to their greenhouse effects. So I thought, oh, okay, we're moving towards the light. That's a good thing to hear.
All right, fantastic. Any other indicators we're hoping to see from our government now as we move beyond Trumpism? Well,
okay, they're stuck. I'll come up with, I got a half a dozen out of things.
All right, go Gail.
Okay, also in that bill that we're seeing, and I'll give it right back to you, Michael. There's the tucked in there, along with the Republican or desire to have business lunches written off, but also there is a American Latino and Women's History Museum that is funded, as well as an expansion of Pell Grants to prisoners, so that if you are in prison, you have the opportunity to at least do something worthy of yourself and to help you get out and do well in the world. So I was really happy to see those two things. Sorry, Michael, jumped all over you.
No, that's fine. That's great, because you guys are all so well-informed and specific there. I just was going to say that I'm keen on the whole infrastructure thing as well, Kevin and Gail. The green energy thing is a part of that infrastructure. And by golly, if people can be gotten back to work at satisfying jobs that are actually doing something productive, we're going to see... That's like medicine for the soul, productive work like that. So the other thing that I would think of is I'm looking for a return to actually some form of diplomacy that is broadly rational and reality based. So there you go.
Yes, sir.
Lynn, what are your
thoughts? I'm looking for an end to the attack on a free press. I would like very much for Voice of America to get funded again and become again a beacon of light around the world. I would like to see our media be called out, like you said, Truman, for those who are printing baseless claims and charges without any kind of evidence. That needs to be addressed. And our media that is fact-based and evidence-based and really trying hard to do fact-checking and be honest, letting the people decide from the facts rather than have news become opinion about what somebody else thinks you should be doing, I believe is a critical cornerstone of our democracy, and I'd like to see it shored up.
Bring back Walter Cronkite, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but the old adage, it's always darkest before the dawn, I think it's going to get much darker in the next 20 days. We're going to see our democracy tested in ways that none of us have ever seen it tested. And it's really going to be up to citizens, up to the military, up to representatives in the Congress and governors to stand up to this darkness and to look toward the light. And it's going to be a very, very dangerous time. We've got, 27, 28 days until the inauguration. And it won't go away after the inauguration, but it will be a different environment. And that is what I'm looking forward to, getting through these next 27, 28 days.
You know, I found it refreshing that so many Republicans have actually been faced with the idea that their party may not be upholding either their personal principles or the principles laid out in the Constitution. They've actually had to realize they can't serve two masters, and
okay,
they
folks,
must make a decision.
We are out of time. See y'all next week.